Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It is Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, we are doing Detroit Rock Legends for our double penetration. You know, we do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday. And today, tonight, this episode that you are listening to right now that we did live 5 days ago on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, it is Alice Cooper. You can't get much more of a rock and roll American legend than Alice Cooper. He is on the show this week with Big Jay Oakerson and I. It is a fantastic episode. Just a super cool dude. And if you know me, you know that I've been saying forever, if you go to GasDigitalNetwork.com and you subscribe using the code SDR, you get a 14-day free trial. Well, guess what? You got about 10 days left to get that 14-day free trial because starting in April, it drops to a 7-day free trial. So if you get into there right before the last day of March, you still get that 2-week free trial. But going on April 1st forward, it's a 7-day free trial. 20% off access to the entire network, commercial free, HD, on demand, live chat, all the things we've been talking about forever. Or you know what? Just listen to the show, spread the word anywhere you want. I don't care. Just happy you're along for the ride. And here it is right now, rock and roll royalty, Detroit royalty. It is Alice Cooper on the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me the tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me, as always, Mr. Big Jay Oakerson. Well, not as always, but it's very often. And Shannon here as well, as always, that's for sure. And we're just jumping right into it because, God damn it, we have a legend on the show. It is Mr. Alice Cooper. How are you, sir?
How are you guys doing?
Great.
How do I have a feeling that Shannon's the brains of the operation?
Well, that would be an incorrect feeling.
I like that view.
So, first of all, Alice, let's just start off this. I doubt you're going to remember me. Your manager remembered me, so I was proud of that. But I had a radio show for years called The Tour Bus. Out in Jersey, and you did it many, many times, but we're going back, you know, over a decade. So it's been a while since we saw each other.
Oh, okay.
I have a story that is one of my favorite moments in time that I know you're not going to remember. And Jay's going to make fun of me because I made it up. But I confirmed it today to make sure I wasn't wrong. And then we'll get into this. So I think it was 2008. You were headlining a concert called Rock the Bayou in Texas, and I was one of the hosts of the event, right?
Ah, okay.
And there was, you know, the backstage radio tent and whatnot. And then, you know, you were there. I think it was a 3-day event. One of the days you were the headliner, right?
Yeah.
And of course, all of us radio idiots want to interview Alice Cooper. And it came to the back line that you weren't even at the venue. You were at a hotel nearby. And you weren't going to be able to do interviews, right? And I said to the manager, can you just mention me, Ralph from Tour Bus Radio? Because we just had him on recently with the album at the time, which I loved so much. My favorite album of yours, Brutal Planet. And they come back a few minutes later and say, I don't know what you said, but he's going to interview you. He said yes to you. And I went to your hotel room and got to interview you. And it was one of the best times of my life.
See, there you have that kind of pull.
Yeah, well, you don't remember me, but I'll take it anyway, Alice. I don't care.
It's because it never, ever happened.
I swear it happened. I swear on my life it happened.
Ralph, can I say you're looking fantastic, buddy?
Oh, thank you. I'm down. I lost 50 pounds now. I'm at 50 pounds I lost.
Are you kidding me? Really?
No, it was crazy.
I lost 15 pounds on COVID. The COVID knocked off 15 pounds.
From it was getting it.
Pounds I was trying to lose. So I was on the COVID diet. It worked.
And also, by the way, I saw it today. Congratulations on getting vaccinated.
Got vaccinated twice. Got both shots.
Same here.
Very nice.
And also found out that the album today went number one on Billboard.
Right, which is crazy because I was saying it's number one almost to the day or the week that Love It to Death hits 50. Right. I mean, give or take.
Yeah, really crazy. I mean, and that was a total coincidence that we went to Detroit to do this album. It was, you know, when people told me, well, it's 50 years since you did Love It to Death in Detroit. And I went, I said, we didn't even think about that. That's just a total coincidence.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's got to be, it's such a crazy feeling to think your breakthrough album, which I think it was your third album. I could be wrong on that, right? But
third album, yeah, but yeah. it was really the first Alice Cooper album. Right. The Pretties for You and Easy Action with Frank Zappa was more songs that we had written when we were in high school almost that really weren't Alice Cooper songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very interesting when I watched the Super Duper Alice Cooper documentary that which I watched a while ago now, but I always found the most interesting thing is the evolution of the stage show, and that you guys at first were, everyone was just doing the Beatles, so everybody just had to do know, like dress like the zombies or something. Everyone was just wearing like turtlenecks or suits, which I thought was so interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, back then we were in high school. We just started, you know, and we were doing, all we wanted to do was get in a band because, first of all, you could make $20 and girls loved us. You know,
yeah.
We had a little bit of long hair and we were in a band. You know, that was Beatlemania back then. It was the coolest thing in the world to be in a band. Had no idea that, you know, 60 years later, I'd still be doing it. In fact, I'd be in two bands.
It's so crazy to think that. It's insane. Yeah. Is it true that your original look was inspired by Bette Davis? Is that true?
Well, the actual, when I created the Alice Cooper character, there were two things I wanted on it. You know, I like the idea of what Bette Davis looked like in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. It was this white kind of makeup. She was trying to look like a little girl. And she was 80, you know, mm-hmm. So her eye makeup was all smeared. Her lipstick was all smeared. And it was really disturbing. It was truly disturbing. And then the idea behind the eyes was the idea of it looked like some kind of demented clown, you know. And you put the two together and suddenly that was Alice Cooper, you know.
That's really wild. And it's also funny now what you've said this many times, and I couldn't agree more that you can't shock an audience now. Then there was, and even up until, I guess Manson would be your last example of somebody that caused a stir, I guess.
No, you can do it now. You just got to different ways. You're like, did Alice Cooper just call that girl a chick?
Yeah, I know.
So did he call a girl sweetheart? Excuse me?
Well, how could you do that?
did he put his arm around her for a photo? What?
There's a song on the album called Shut Up and Rock. And it's about a guy in Detroit that is so politically incoherent. And he's talking to the girl and he goes, I don't care about your yoga class. I don't care about what you did today. I don't care about your knockoff Gucci purse. Just shut up and rock.
Let me ask you.
It's characters I know in Detroit like that have no idea what politically correct is. You know?
Sure.
It's amazing because if you think about it now, like Jay just said, if you were to design something to be politically incorrect now or to be against the grain now, you'd immediately get canceled. You wouldn't even get to come out with a third record to finally make it.
Well, here's the problem is the fact that if it keeps going in this direction, there'll be no art. Art right. will be gone because we've decided to become some kind of a strange society where we're afraid of, you know, saying anything. And I hope it doesn't go that way. Well, I think people are getting a little set up with it. Yeah.
It seems you certainly can't musically or comedically even acknowledge the ideas that are, even if they're like antiquated ideas, you can't even, yeah. Or they go, you're even drawing reference to it is horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, comedy will be gone. You know,
oh, yeah, for sure.
And
yeah.
No Mel Brooks. There would have been a Blazing Saddles or a.
Could you imagine? That's always the example too. Blazing Saddles. Not,
you know, they're remaking it though. They're doing a car. I don't know how they're doing this, but they're doing an animated Blazing Saddles. But I don't know how they're doing it. But they're doing it with, I'm imagining, completely different dialogue. But the concept, I don't know. I just saw that the other day.
It's great because he insulted everybody.
Yeah.
He didn't just insult blacks or homosexuals or anything. He just insulted Jews. Anybody that was in his face, he would insult. So everybody felt equally insulted.
Sure, it's Don Rickles-esque, but these people would be leveled now with just like the things going on. It's insane the things you get from making jokes.
You know what I have to ask? Who are the people that are leveling us?
I mean, just very irate Twitter sphere. That's really
Do you know what's funny? I talked to Doug Stanhope about this earlier. He was a very controversial comic in times. And he said it too. It's like, it is the oomph that we keep like giving them by like reacting at all. Almost if you just kind of keep your head down and be like, eh, whatever. But it's hard sometimes when you're being like flogged and being called like, especially things where you're like, whoa, like racist, you know, or woman hater. Like, come on.
I heard somebody actually say that Brady was a racist for beating Kansas City because that black quarterback.
Yeah.
And I went, are you kidding me? Really?
That's great.
And they were serious.
That's amazing. I read also that because you've never really been political at all, right? They've always kind of been away from that. But I read, which I can't imagine what these conversations were like, that you would sit in between John Lennon and Harry Nilsson as they debated politics.
Oh, yeah. I was the referee. I was the guy that, you know, John always wanted me to be political. And I always said, John, you're trying to change the world. I'm trying to just entertain them. You know? And so John would drink and Harry would drink. They were best friends. But when they drank, this guy would say black. This guy says white. This guy says Republican. This guy says Democrat. And it would get heated and it would get heated. Pretty soon I'd go, but sit down. You know, and I mean, I could see it building and I'd sit down and I was the great referee.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I want to jump right now just to the new album for a minute. It is, which is crazy to think the 28th album, as you said, 50, 60 years ago, it's hard to believe that you could even think 28 albums later. First thing is that it seems like it's not necessarily recorded live, but it was recorded like the band in a room like the old days. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I had a band. I had, you know, Johnny B on drums, you know, from Mitch Ryder. I had Wayne Kramer from MC5 and Mark Farner, you know, and, you know, it was such a, you know, well, Joe Bonamassa and Steve Hunter. I mean, I had all these great guitar players in one room. And I said, we can't layer this. This can't be like Welcome to My Nightmare, which is a production, you know. I said, this is a band you want to hear live. So when we came in with Rock and Roll, the Lou Reed thing, you know, I just said, just play it. And they killed it. They just killed it. That's you know, great. I mean, it's to the point where you wouldn't want it to be layered. You know, you want these guys to play it with each other. And I mean, it was just, you know, we ended up doing most of the songs live in the studio.
Your musician selection is world class. I mean, I'm blanking on her name now and I feel bad because I've done deep dives on her, but the girl, the blonde girl you have.
Nita Strauss.
Yes.
Yeah, Hurricane Nita Strauss. Yeah.
I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
She played the guitar.
She just shreds. I mean, I was looking for a shredder and I had Orianti in the band. Orianti is a great blues guitar.
Right. She's great. Yeah.
Killer guitar player. She could sit down and play with Clapton all day. You know, that kind of thing. And I was looking for somebody that shredded. I wasn't looking male or female. I just said, show me the best shredder out there. I've already got Ryan Roxy and Tommy Henriksen. It was Kip Winger. Kip Winger said, have you seen Nita Strauss? And I said, no. He showed me a picture. He played the music for me. And I went, oh, my gosh, girl is great. You know, and I mean, she was immediate.
He was like, bad news, Alice. She's only 17.
Yeah, but she can throw a football 30 yards. She was actually a gymnast. And gave up gym. She picked up a guitar one day and started playing. She went, oh, this is natural for me. But I mean, she is so loved in the band. She's a, you know, a force of nature up there and great. And she loves being on stage.
Yeah. I was gonna say male, female, it doesn't matter. She draws the eye on stage the way she plays and performs. She's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, she got voted guitarist of the decade in Guitar Magazine.
Wow, that's great. You mentioned some of the people on the record. You left out both your daughters were on the record. We interviewed Calico on this show a couple months ago. She's super cool. First time I ever spoke to her. Man, was she. She's a cool chick.
Callie is so funny. She's an improv comedian also, you know. And she's in Bisto Blanco. And my son's band, Co-op, is unbelievable. They're as good as anybody I've ever heard. So the whole family's, you know, got something going on, but Calico is the only one I can think of that could play Alice Cooper. Let's say 30 years from now, you know, Calico would be the one to play out.
I mean, she said at the time that she really helped a lot with the stage sets and this ideas from way back when she was younger. She worked with you on that, right?
It was funny. She'd be 8 years old and she'd be sitting in the audience and we're rehearsing, you know, and the thing. And she goes, "Dad, Dad." And I go, "What?" She said, "Third song is all wrong." "What do you mean?" She says, "The lighting's all wrong. It says it's a scary song. It needs uplighting." And I went,
"Wow,
you're right. It does." So she was in show business before she, you know, she was born into it.
That's funny. My daughter, my daughter was behind the director at my special when we were filming like the intro for it, my stand-up special.
Yeah.
She was like, "The light," she said to him, "like the lighting's too dark." And they were like, "Please sit down." Like, "Please don't look over my shoulder. I got this."
Yeah, no, it's but it's great when they're right. You know, this is sure. The thing I went, "Now that, yeah, you're right. Yeah, should be uplighting."
And listening through the album, one of my favorite songs, just a fun song, the $1,000 High Heel Shoes is fun. But what is the story behind "I Hate You"? That was just kind of an interesting song.
Oh, that was great because, you know, the original band, when we broke up, we didn't really break up as much as we disbanded. And there was no bad blood. Everybody loved everybody. We were friends in high school. We ran track and cross country together. I mean, before the Beatles came out. And so when the band disbanded, everybody went their own way, but we all stayed in touch with each other. There was no lawsuits. There was none of that. And they've been on the last four albums. You know, so that song was born in the studio when we said, "Wouldn't it be great? Why don't we just roast each other? You know, I'll roast Neil. Neil, you roast Mike. Mike, you take Dennis. And at the end, we'll roast our dearly departed Glenn Buxton, who was our lead guitar. He was our Keith Richards, mm-hmm. You know, and with him gone, we really couldn't be the original Alice Cooper band. It was that he was that important to the band. So at the end, the line is, "We hate you for leaving that hole on stage that can't be filled." And it was a real tip of the hat to Glenn, you know.
That's cool.
But we worked together, you know, Dennis and Neil and I worked together all the time, you know.
And you also mentioned Keith Richards, who, from what I read, is the only other rock star, well, the only rock star on the planet, I guess, that gets to call you Vince. Is that true?
He calls me Vince, yeah. He goes, Vinny. He says, "How long has it been since you've had a drink?" I said, "Well, 38 years. And he goes, "Begs the question, why?" Listen, ladies and gentlemen, Jack Sparrow.
I was doing like Wayne's World. I said, you know, I knew your music. I'm 43. So Wayne's World came out when I was younger. But like, so I knew who you were already and was excited to see you in it. Was that your first, like, on a large level, like showing behind the character of like, you know, because, you know, again, a lot of the draw when you were younger, much like Kiss, was like the, "Well, this is like something evil that my parents aren't going to like. I got to like hide and find this." And songs like Ballad of Dwight Frye that are so like, like tormenting and good. It's what the Wayne's World thing was such like, you know, a drop of like, just showing like a softer side. Was that the first time really?
No, Muppet Show.
I think
the Muppets, when the Muppets were like at their height. And the funny thing was they asked me, they said, "We want to do the Muppet Show." And it was the number one show in the world, you know. And the funniest thing, because it was Frank Oz and Jim Henson, and it was all the writing was so good in it, you know.
Sure.
And I said, "Oh man, I've spent all this time, you know, developing this evil character. I don't want to water it down." And I said, "Well, who's been on the show recently?" And they said, "Christopher Lee, Vincent Price." And I went, "I'm in." You know, if they can be in it, Alice Cooper can certainly do it, you know. And I never had so much fun doing anything. It was a week of rehearsal in London. And the funny thing was after 2 days, I swear, you're talking to the Muppets like they're people.
I'm sure. That's great. You know, that's awesome. It,
you know, and I'm telling Miss Piggy, I said, "You know, this would be funnier if you put your head on my shoulder." You know, "Oh, that's a good idea. You know, Kermit would stick his head in my dressing room and go, "Everything okay?" And I go, "Yeah, Kermit, I'm fine." You know,
that's so fine. Great. That is just
I
so
swear
great.
You start talking to them and they react like people. And that's so the great thing that's, you know, it's supernatural after a while.
You know, you just touched on it a little bit. And I think you, better than any of the other, how should we say, the larger than life characters, figured out a way to be you and the character, right? Where like you can be the normal you, and then there's the Alice Cooper on stage, right?
And there was a time when we had painted ourselves into a corner, And I told Marilyn Manson about this too. I said, you know, don't get to the point where that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. And he started acting. He started doing art and stuff like that. But for us, we were so notorious, and Alice Cooper was so notorious at the time. We talked and I said, we have got to start doing things that lets the audience in on the fact that Alice is a character I play.
Right.
You know, and that I can. So I started doing the Johnny Carson show. And I was on the diocese talking, you know,
and be normal, which I think is so key. Like, yeah. We'll bring up, like, you know, which we've talked about on the show on the comedic side. Andrew Dice Clay just became always Dice.
Well,
and not,
that's, you know, I'm a huge Marilyn Manson.
And that's what you're bringing, Marilyn Manson.
I have lyrics
on the show.
I have lyrics tattooed on my arm, so I'm a huge fan of his since he was his early days as well. And also for the same reason, when I was younger and I got into your music, I liked, but, and again, I feel like I never was like, I never had like a, this guy gets my pain and he probably goes home to a dark castle. And what I got that it was like, he was giving his art through this kind of like character he was doing, but there is a fear. What you're saying with Dice, Ralph, same thing, like where he starts living the character 24/7. And right. I don't want to make you ever speak ill of a friend. And I said, I'm a huge fan, but I worry just in following him in the news as best I can, like that the character blurs sometimes too much with real life. And like
Alice, we had Scott Buteski on, who was in Spooky Kids with Manson, recorded first couple albums. Yeah. And he said he knew that it was over. He said it before he passed away a couple of years ago, but he said, he knew it was over when he came into the studio one day and he called him Brian and he goes, why are you calling me Brian? My name is Marilyn. And he knew that that was when it was over for him because he stopped separating the two.
Yeah. For me, it was a matter of survival. Alice was my favorite rock star. I designed Alice to be my favorite rock star. I get to play him. So
cool.
Sword and, you know, all the swashbuckling stuff up there. And I always liked the idea of an arrogant, condescending villain that every once in a while slips on a banana peel and loses it in front of the audience and then has to recover.
Right. You know, like a
Basil Fawlty, you know. Mm-hmm. But the audience loves that, too. I think that it's a relief that there's comedy involved in the Alice show. It's subtle, but there's comedy in there. And yeah, doing Wayne's World, you know, I got there and, you know, Mike says, you know, he says, well, we want you to do this song. Yeah, great. And he said, but I have some dialogue and you're an actor. So, you know, I said, sure, give me the dialogue. He hands me like 8 pages of dialogue. And I go, well, when do we? He goes, about half an hour. So the whole thing about, you know, all that stuff I was blabbing out, most of that I was just riffing.
That's great.
I could remember parts of it, Milwaukee and Algonquin and, you know, that stuff.
I want to say it's Algonquin for the good people or the good land.
No, the good land. Milwaukee was Algonquin for the good land.
That's so great.
And Michael and Dan are so great. They spent all their time trying to get me to laugh while I was doing that bit, you know. Because I found a point between them that I delivered all the dialogue to. They were doing, and if you would have heard the "We're Not Worthy," the outtakes for that, it's the most vile thing you've ever heard in your life.
Oh, with like the "We Suck" when they were doing all that.
Oh my gosh! No, it got really dirty. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those guys are geniuses comedically. Yeah.
They sure. really are.
And that's also, have you had again? Like, have you had the break moments of like? Because I said, I've noticed that with another touring partner of yours who I'm a huge fan of, too. And he has a new album coming out, is Rob Zombie, who's an amazing performer. Like, I've almost found that between his sets, I've toured with them doing comedy, actually. Yeah. And, like, between his songs, like, he does, it's of all comedically slanted, for sure, the way he talks to the crowd. It's all in joke. It's not like, you know, he doesn't just try to keep up, like, you know, like Howling at the Moon stuff. It's all breaks of character, wonderful rants about complaining about people filming with their phones, which I've always found hilarious. But have you had, like, you have such a production also, it's nice to not have to break a character that's too deep to, like, if something like I'm sure all the years the guillotines had to have a mishap once or twice.
Oh yeah, you have your spinal tap moments up there, especially the more moving parts you have, the more spinal tap moments you have. And you have to then, at that point, Alice turns to Clouseau. becomes Cujo, you know. And those are the moments where you have to kind of let the audience in on the fact that it didn't work. And we're red faced and trying to I'm kicking the thing aside, trying to feel like it didn't happen. And that adds to it though, because you're kind of like letting them in. You're breaking that wall then, you know.
You're in it together. Now you're in the thing.
You're letting them in on it, you know. But at the same time, everything, you know, has broken. And there's moments on stage, you know, where something really dramatic is supposed to happen and something really silly happens and you can't stop laughing because you know how serious this is to the show, this piece. And then it becomes something totally. I told my band members this. They said, what happens if I make a mistake? And I said, what kind of mistake? They said, well, let's say I fall over my amp. I said, well, then wait for 3 more songs and fall over your amp again. I said, and then 6 songs later, fall over again. And then pretty soon the audience goes, oh, that's the amp falling guy. That guy falls over the amp.
I said, memorable.
Just keep repeating the mistake and it's not a mistake.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You know, one of the things that you say, which it's funny, I think everyone that loves this kind of music more than anything hopes it to be true. I just don't know if it is. And you seem to believe it, that there's going to be a resurgence of rock coming.
It's rock and roll. If you look at where we started in the 60s, right? And the only kind of music that has weathered the storm through all kinds of changes, through punk, through grunge, through hip hop, through disco, is hard rock.
I thought you were going to say big band.
Well, look at Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, the Rolling Stones, bands that play hard rock, no matter what's going on, cuts right through it. And I think that's the one kind of rock and roll that won't die. 5 guys, 2 guitars, bass, drums, lead singer. That's always going to be there. There's kids right now in garages everywhere learning Aerosmith songs.
Do you think the next band is already playing that's going to be able, because like right now for an arena it has to be legends, I think, right? Or packages. Like you could do arenas. Obviously we said the Stones could always do arenas, like, you know, these big deal things. Tool was able to go and still do arenas. But do you think the next band is playing now that like isn't doing that yet?
Well, you know, first of all, Foo Fighters can play any place.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, we're in that position, and Aerosmith's in that position. But I like going out with like Cheap Trick. I like going out with bands that we really like. We were out with Motley, and you know, it's like you don't want to go on a tour with somebody you don't like, you know. But packages are very cool now because some of these bands are better now than they were when they were, you know, when they were huge.
Tighter at this point.
Much tighter, but that's, you know, I just think that rock and roll is too, I can't believe that the 80s Sunset Strip rock, spandex rock, will not raise its ugly head again because it was too much fun.
But don't you think it might, to go back to what we talked about a little while ago, it was a little misogynistic for today's audience, you know, but
the guys look more like girls than their groupies.
Yeah, I guess that's true too. I remember one of my friends, by the way, one of my very good friends growing up, he bought the first Poison record and then he wanted to get his money back when he found out it wasn't girls. He thought it was girls. He was attracted to them. And then he got mad that it wasn't girls. So
I think hip hop took over the girls, like the slutty girls in the audience culture.
For sure.
Hip hop took that over. Wherever the girls go, the guys follow.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's always been like that. But one of the points that became very clear, as Gene Simmons recently said, rock and roll is dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Our album just went to number one and it's a pure rock and roll album. So right there, it shows you people are hungry for a hard rock. Yeah, you know, sure. that's you know, I really believe that with all this pandemic and everybody being stuck at home and no live music, people are ready for a really good hard rock album that's fun, you know. So I guarantee you, every band I can think of during this pandemic has been writing and recording. You guys are going to get with an avalanche of records.
That's probably very true. That's yeah. And they had a lot of time to work on it. They weren't forced to put something out immediately.
There's no excuse for Guns N' Roses not to have an album out. Come on.
That's very true. You know, in reading up on you again, you know, I'm a fan forever. And as I said earlier, fuck, I love Brutal Planet to me still. Like, I will blast that record all the time. I love that record so much. But anyway, in reading up, there's this famous chicken incident that happened years ago, right? Yes. That launched your career. But the part of it that I didn't realize, and please explain if this is true, that you didn't know that chickens couldn't fly.
I had no idea. I'm from Detroit. I've never been on a farm in my life, you know. And we were on the stage. John Lennon and Yoko's on this side. The Doors are on this side. There's a feather pillow that I opened up, and it's just a myriad of white snow up there. And then I look down, and there's a white chicken on stage. Now, I didn't bring the chicken. Some guy in Toronto said, I got my keys, I got my wallet, got my chicken. Okay, time to go. Throws it on stage. And, you know, I looked at it, and it had feathers, it had wings. It should fly, right?
It's not a bad thought. In the moment, I fully get it.
Yeah, I picked it up and I kind of chugged it in the audience, and I figured somebody would take it home as a pet. Oh, we'll call it Alice. The audience tore it to pieces.
Yeah.
So wild.
And threw the parts of the chicken back up on stage. And of course, the next day, Frank Zappa calls me and he says, did you kill a chicken on stage? And I went, no. And he said, well, don't tell anybody. They love it. Right then, I realized that the audience was looking for a villain. Right. And I went, aha. You know, all these Peter Pans and no Captain Hook. I will gladly be Captain Hook. And now here's the kicker of the story, though. So the first 10 rows of the audience were all in wheelchairs. They're the ones that tore the chicken
up. They're the ones that tore the chicken up? Oh, my God.
Makes it even more macabre, isn't it?
That's crazy.
Really. More strange.
They had a lot of tension to get out.
They were getting back at that chicken. They didn't like the fact that, you know. But, I mean, that's even more insane than
that's
than,
crazy. It's that's crazy. That really is crazy.
And it was the Toronto Peace Festival
with the people you say that are on the sidelines of the stage there or side stage there. Were you always from the get go like very staunch professional with everything? Would like or were you kind of like a loose cannon too? And I asked it also because I'm a huge fan also of Jim Morrison and The Doors.
Yeah.
But what I found funny about The Door as a performer myself in comedy and someone who I do like, you know, I'm very professional about like showing up and doing my thing on time right. And doing everything asked of me and certainly not like bailing on a show just because I'm like fucked off getting hammered somewhere.
Right.
I do think when I was young and watched that Doors movie, which is the Oliver Stone movies, but got me into them. And then I did went in deep with The Doors for years.
Yeah. Oh, they're great.
Everything I thought was cool about his personality in my 40s now, I'm like, guy seems like a real fucking pain in the ass to work with. Like, seems like it's like, oh God, dude, we're trying to get out of here on time. Can this fucker just show up, please?
It was really interesting about The Doors. We opened for them for a while. And I they were one of the best live bands I'd ever heard. They were amazing. I mean, Robbie Krieger didn't play like anybody else. You know, Ray Manzarek played like nobody else. That band was so good. And every night they would do The End or When the Music's Over. Mm-hmm. And the story was never the same. He changed the story every night.
Wow.
And so the one that you hear on the record, it just happened to be the one he did that night.
Sure, you know, sure.
Jim was very unpredictable, but they were never late. They were always on time in the studio. He was on the money every time, you know. Now his regular life, he was very self-destructive, you know.
Yeah.
We got along very well because we drank together, but he was very self-destructive. He would take pills the way you would eat Skittles, you know.
That's what they described. They described him not showing up for it, and there's audio recording of it because Ray Manzarek does the show.
Yeah.
He sings the whole show. But it was
that never happened on our tour. That was, you know.
No, this was something with Jefferson Starship in Amsterdam, and they said he was walking around town with someone gave him a fishbowl full of all different colors pills, and he was just taking them like handfuls, like he was eating popcorn.
That's when rock and roll was rock and roll.
Yeah, boy, was
good
it?
Old days, the good old days. I like you. Also, you refer to your '80s records as your blackout records because you don't remember recording them. That's how a rock and roll you were, I guess.
Yeah. There was a Zipper Catch a Skin, Special Forces. Probably Flush the Fashion was. I was getting a little more sober. Dada. And to this day, I just talked to Bob Ezrin today, in fact, and we were talking. I said, you know, there are some songs on these albums I don't remember writing or recording. They're pretty good. And he's going, you know, I was looking at that. We should maybe go back in and find some of these songs and redo them the way they should be done. And I went, absolutely. That's a great idea. So that may happen.
That would be cool. And that actually leads me to one of my other questions. Have you ever heard a rendition of one of your songs that you loved? That one of the cover, like I know there was that whole cover record years ago, Humanary Stew or something like that.
Humanary Stew.
Yeah. Humanary Stew. Has you ever heard of a cover that another band did that you're like, well, that's a pretty good
Zombie
cover.
Does Schools Out. It's great.
Yeah. You know, I'm telling you, there was, first of all, the Foo Fighters. I go up on stage with the Foos all the time and do songs. They know all my songs perfectly. They do them as well as my band does, you know. But they all learned listening to those early records, Love It to Death and Killer. That's their guitar player said that was our Bible, listening to those. But, you know, there was a really good version of Welcome to My Nightmare by Dio.
Yeah, I remember Dio, that. Yeah.
Really good version of it. I mean, to the point where it was really, really, really cool. And Roger Daltrey did No More Mr. Nice Guy.
That's cool.
And the funny thing about that was he says,
Megadeth. Megadeth did that too, right?
Yeah. And Daltrey, though, he says, this was, you know, very easy for me to sing this song. And I said, well, it should be. It's Substitute. I mean, we patterned it after Substitute, one of the Who songs.
That's really cool. That's really funny.
The one that got me, though, the one that was the nicest one was Sinatra did one. Sinatra did You and
really?
Me.
Really?
Yeah. Tina Turner did Only Women Bleed and just killed it. And Etta James did Only Women Bleed and just tore your heart out with it. You know, and to me, that was, you know, that was a song that was, it was important for that album. We needed that song for The Nightmare. And they took it out, separated it, and it was a woman's anthem. You know, women bled emotionally, not physically. That's what I was saying in it. And they picked up and made that like a woman's anthem, you know, and 13 different women recorded that song. But
that's crazy. I didn't even realize that. That's amazing. Tina Turner. That's great to have that. It's just
it's amazing. And did anybody ever cover Ballad of Dwight? I love a catalog of your songs, but that song always hit me so much. And like, it's one of them songs every year. I listen to it many, many times. Just when it comes on, I put it on. And, I couldn't hear that sounding any other way. It's so distinctly Alice Cooper.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you who else. Okay. You, Johnny Depp, Tim Burton, the Foo Fighters, and Marilyn Manson. That's their favorite song.
Wow. It's a good company, Jay.
Everybody came to me when I was here. They said, no, Dwight Frye. Got to do Dwight Frye. That's so our favorite song.
It's rare to think of someone making a song that's what I'm always impressed by. How layered a song is, and like just the way it goes all over the place and comes back is for a young artist. Again, I'm just like someone who started doing what I do at 19 and being like 43 now. It's that thing. Like I just appreciate that. I'm like, man, when I was young, I couldn't have constructed maybe humor the way I can now and see things and loop them around. And that's such a mature song for a young.
Well, it happened as this when we would sit and watch old horror movies. Because that was what the Alice Cooper band did. We love that old RKO, you know. And we'd watch Frankenstein. And I'd go, this guy that plays Fritz is really the most frightening character in the whole show. And then we watched Dracula. This guy that plays Renfield is really the scariest guy in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Both guys, Dwight Frye. That was his name, Dwight Frye,
really?
The actor that played those characters. And I said, how come he never gets any credit? Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff. You know, Lon Chaney. What about Dwight Frye? So we decided to dedicate a song to him and make him a star. He'd been long dead, you know, died in 1959 or something. But we still said this guy deserved to get recognition.
That's crazy. That's really great. Did anyone from his lineage, like his kids or family, did they ever acknowledge its existence?
His grandson was at a Comic-Con, and Dennis Dunaway, our bass player, did a picture with him. And he says, "Alice, he looks just like Dwight Frank."
Wow, that's so cool. That's really wild.
It's pretty creepy. And yes, yeah, he totally acknowledged it. And he realized, he says, that song was really something that, you know, brought my grandfather life. You know, I mean, it gave him that kind of status. And we just think he deserved it. You know,
that's amazing. We're talking about like various iconic moments of yours. And it's funny, when one of the things I always think about when I think of you, I don't know what year it was. I guess it was in the late 90s. I don't know when you had to announce Jethro Tull won Grammy and not Metallica for best metal record. That had to be one of the most idiotic, insane moments of your life.
It was the most confusing moment. Confuse a cat, you know. And we did the rehearsal, and then he said, "Okay, and the winner is." I went, "Oh yeah, blah blah blah." Okay, and we got to the thing, and I opened up the thing, and I said, "And the winner is Jethro Tull." And I realized right then what had happened. It was a brand new category.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The judges, the only name that they recognized was Jethro Tull.
Yep.
Metallica was a new entity.
Right.
And all these bands, of course, and all the musicians knew who the metal bands were. Right. But the guys that voted on it went, "Jethro Tull. Yeah, we know who he is." And even Jethro Tull went, "What?"
Metal.
And Jethro Tull. It might have been 91 then. I think it's probably 91.
Jethro Tull rocks, by the way, but it's not metal.
Yeah. It's not metal.
It was very, you know, one of the great prog rock bands of all time.
Sure.
But they certainly were not metal.
Metal.
Such a great moment. I remember looking at your face. I actually looked it up today. You just had such a look of astonishment of like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, I thought they gave me the wrong envelope. I thought that they gave me the envelope that I was supposed to read in rehearsal, because in rehearsal, I opened it up and it was Jethro Tull.
So you thought they were just hiding from who it was.
I thought they handed me the wrong envelope.
Could you imagine the blowback if it was like, for the first ever best rap album of the year, Barry White?
So now that Detroit Story is number one record, right? But we are in the middle of a pandemic. Do you have dates down the road on the horizon to tour this, or you're waiting to see?
I've got both my shots. I've already had COVID. And in Arizona alone, I know they're doing 25,000 a day immunizations here. And I talked to London the other day. They had already done 20 million.
Crazy.
So it's going to open up. It's going to open up, I think, middle of summer. And there are already dates. I'm already hearing dates for us and the Vampires. The Vampires are, I think, in August in London.
That's great.
And I think it's all going to, if you've already had your shots, what would you be afraid of? Why wouldn't
you? That's me. I had both shots ready. Jay's had one. Yeah. Shannon's getting one soon, I think.
Saturday.
It's the most painless shot you've ever had. I didn't even know I got a shot.
Yeah. Did you get anything from the second, any sort of wonkiness after the second? Because I got a little wonkiness after the second.
It was like at 12 hours later, I said, piece of cake.
After the first, I had a sore arm and eye. The next day, I was like, I don't want to do shit. But
I walked upstairs and I was suddenly about 5 degrees below zero. I had to chill so bad that I got in bed. I had about that many covers. My wife was wrapped around me. I had everything on 80 degrees and shivering for 2 hours. And then it went away.
And then it's short lived, but it does exist. My mom just got her second shot as well.
But
I'm going to see my mom. What did you say? Sorry.
Good. Yeah, that's supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's your body creating antibodies. I'm going to see my mom for the first time in a year and a half, long as I've ever not seen her, because she just got her second shot. Thank God.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know we don't have a lot of time with you, but we do end the show every week with a very specific question. And I'm very excited to hear these answers from you, sir.
The first time ever I saw
So the name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. And we ask our guests every week their first experience with all three. And we start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you went to, but one we're going to know and one ideally you went to on your own volition. It's not like your mother took you or something. Like one you said, I want to go see that band.
The Rolling Stones. That's Rolling Stones in 1964.
And how old were you?
I was in high school. I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school. and it was just the Stones, and it was just like they didn't even have up lighting, and they didn't have down lighting. It was
Had your daughter there to give them some advice on how to light it.
Oh, I'm telling you what, it was just like a being in a club, only it was 13,000 people, and they did 45 minutes maybe. But they did those great songs, and Brian Jones was in the band, and Bill Wyman was in the band. They were the Stones.
Wow. Same first concert as B.B. Buell. Did you also later go on to have sex with Mick Jagger?
No, but B.B. was around, yeah. Drugs is an interesting thing.
They like the drug. By the way, I want you to tell the first one, but then I read something that I want you to also elaborate on, please. But we'll start with the first drug you ever did, ideally after weed, unless weed was not the first drug you ever did.
No, weed was the first drug, and it was Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, well, that's great. Then they'll hear that story.
I'm sitting there after the show. You know, I went to see them, and we were just a little high school band. But they said, hey, you know, come on up. We went up to the hotel room, and we're sitting on this bed, and Jimmy goes, yeah, man. You know, and I went, okay, you know. And then he goes and he puts a quarter in the bed, you know, the vibrating bed. You know? And there's like eight people sitting on the bed. He goes, we're on a spaceship. And I went, okay.
That's so fucking great.
That's no one has a better start. First,
no one has a better story ever in the 5 years we've done this.
That's by far.
Getting high with Jimi Hendrix was like, that was my first.
That is so cool.
He must have been on something else. So weed at that point for him wouldn't have made him that spacey. We're on a spaceship.
I read a thing one time that said, he says, I only did LSD 3 times. I went, a day.
Yeah, really.
The 60s, the 70s, yeah, only 3 times, right? And then one I read that was interesting was you said your worst experience on drugs where you woke up and there were 40 bodies around you and you thought you were the only one that survived. It was like a drug that killed everybody.
Yeah, it was Detroit. And I think it was crystal THC. And honestly, it was like 4 a.m. I kind of regained consciousness and there were bodies everywhere. And I thought it was like Kool-Aid, you know, I thought it was like, the Jim Jones thing. And I got up. I remember it was about 20 degrees below outside and I walked outside just in my shirt on just to wake up, you know, just to get up. And when I came back in, everybody was just kind of like coming out. It was weird. It was like a Fellini thing, you know, I mean, it was so strange that I really did believe that everybody was dead and that I was the one that survived it. Yeah.
And then we'll do your first sex experience.
You know, it's really hard to remember. I got to be honest with you. I really can't remember that. But let's put it this way. We lived in Topanga Canyon, and there was a constant party going on. And it could have been at any time. it was just, you know, one of those things where when Phoenix, you know, it was L.A. that certainly was the scene of the crime. And it was kind of like always in LA. Mm-hmm. It was just a day.
Well, then maybe we ask this question also too sometimes. Do you remember your first ever, like, I'm a star and that's why this girl has come back and just been like, whatever you want, I'm here to do? Like your first like real intense groupie?
Yeah, and that was, you know, back then that was so normal. That was just a rock and roll, you know, normalcy, you know, was that. And to be honest with you, that got old.
I'm sure.
I bet.
That actually got really old to the point where, you know, you're going, yeah, right. Yeah. When you're a kid, you go, oh, are you kidding? You know.
No, but it's definitely gonna get to the point where, like, I'd rather just hang with my buddies and shoot the shit.
Yeah, we want to play poker, all right? You know?
You know what? I didn't realize, though, that you also briefly dated Raquel Welch. I didn't know that, too. That's pretty cool.
Now, it was really interesting. It was right when I had just fallen in love with my wife. She was 18 years old. She was a ballerina, totally opposite of Raquel. Mm-hmm. You know, Raquel was a battleship and Cheryl was a little ballerina. And I was so in love with my wife then, you know, she was going to become my wife. We still married, by the way. After
right, you're married still forever. Right. Yeah.
And that I didn't have any desire to be with this. And she wasn't fairly incredible. I mean, you had your poster on your wall, you know.
What year was this?
It was about 1975.
So Raquel Welch was 81 years old, still looked fantastic.
And at the time, Jay, I was 42.
And you know what happened? It was at the time when movie stars were dating rock stars. A movie star had to have a rock star. You know, Faye Dunaway was with Jay Giles' guy and all this and this and this. And so she decided I was going to be, you know, and I just wasn't interested because I was in love with this other girl.
That's great.
And it was such a weird present. But, you know, anybody else would say, are you crazy? And I'd go, yeah, but what could you say? I was in love with somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously made the right choice because you're still married to her. So that
oh, yeah, 45 years of Cheryl. Cheryl's better now she's ever been. In fact, she's in the show. She plays three characters in the show. Mademoiselle Guillotine and the Dead Bride. And she does all the high vocals. And she does all the high vocals for the vampires, too. So wow. She's the only female vampire, yeah.
That's so exciting. So I really
did Cheryl ever say to you once on your anniversary, does she go, You should have gave her one spin. You know what I mean? I'd have been here.
No, if there's any kind of a problem, I go, you know what? I turned down Raquel Welch for you. And she goes,
You
just tell you take out your phone and you're like, I still got Raquel's number here. Yeah. And
but she's right there. She's the smartest thing you ever did. And Raquel's a great lady. I mean, she's truly a great lady. And really, you know, people just think of her as a movie star. She was a singer, a dancer, a performer, comic. She was she could do all that. She could do a
quadruple threat
on her own, you know. But
Raquel Welch and Hal Linden, the quadruple threat.
Oh my gosh, Hal Linden. Didn't dig that one up.
I just always remember, I think it was interesting at the time when I first started getting into entertainment at all, watching documentaries on things that would show, like, you know, I knew Hal Linden as Barney Miller only, but like everyone in comedy at that point, comedy didn't pay anything. So you had to be like an all around, like, song and dance man. You had to be able to sing, act, do stand-up comedy. Like, it was, you were expected to do all of it.
And everybody could tap dance. Yeah. Everybody could tap dance.
Hal Linden.
John Wayne could tap dance. You know, Bela Lugosi could tap dance. Why couldn't I tap dance? That was the one thing I was missing.
Should be the name of the episode. Why can't Alice Cooper tap dance? All right, so we're going to quickly wrap it up. I will start with this, obviously, or end with this, rather. The Detroit Stories, congratulations on number one record. 50 years after your breakthrough record, just fucking crazy. Yeah. Obviously, tour dates will happen at some point, but nothing announced yet.
Sooner the better, yeah.
Yeah, and alicecooper.com for everything you might need to know, or, I mean, you're pretty easy to find these days. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
Have you ever met Anthony Jeselnik?
Yeah, well, Jeselnik well, yeah.
He makes me laugh more than anybody else.
He's
so dark.
He agreed with somebody calling me a Nazi in an article.
Yeah, that's true. He did.
So I don't know. I guess he doesn't like me anymore. But no, I've been buddies with Anthony for some time.
You introduced me to him, Jay, when we went to Oddball Comedy
Oddball
Festival.
Tour. Yeah, but I don't know why.
Tell him I'm a big fan.
I don't know why he retweeted an article that says that I'm a racist, homophobic Nazi. That was insane.
Because it's accurate?
Because it's funny. That's why.
No, it wasn't funny.
He didn't do it to be funny.
This article was trying to chop us down.
Oh, I see. It wasn't done in humor.
It was very, but maybe it would be the ultimate humor if he was like, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to back out.
That would have been great.
Very, very just.
Maybe that was the motivation. That would have been great if that's the motivation.
But I sort of asked him if it was, and he didn't respond. I assume it wasn't.
Yeah.
He might be going woke, man. Listen, some people are being beaten into submission with it. Yeah. We're trying our best.
No, I'm telling you what, it's like all you have to. What? Okay, tell me about this. Now, this doesn't make sense to me. And maybe you guys can shine a light on it. So Bruce Springsteen gets stopped for drinking, and they check his alcohol level, and it's not illegal. So they let him go, right?
Yeah.
And he loses all his sponsors.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Did he say he did blow?
No, he didn't. It came out that he was under the level.
He was under the level.
He wasn't legally
totally
drunk.
Under the level. But the thing about it was, you know, that's, again, one of these things that's so sensitive, you know.
Yeah, it's lame. So I'll say it's lame he lost a commercial. Also thought it was weird that he was doing a Heartland commercial. That Jeep commercial was very like, I like to look at an eagle in my backyard and ride my tractor. Yeah. I was like, oh, Bruce, you're from Jersey, dude. It's a bus ride to New York.
That's right.
It's too much. You can't do all this. Sometimes I like to talk to a shaman out on my desert.
Yeah, he's never in the desert. Come on.
We were doing Legion of Skank. We were doing Drunk Bruce.
I just saw you in Newark.
Dude, we were doing Drunk Bruce on Legion of Skanks. It was making us laugh so hard. Just pulling that thing goes, what seems to be the officer problem?
Jay, your plugs real quick.
I am back on the road again. Limited capacity shows in these cities, but maybe not in Texas. But I'm doing Salt Lake City this weekend, Wise Guys Comedy Club, Friday and Saturday, two shows each night. I don't know if they're sold out yet. If they're not, go get tickets, bigjcomedy.com. After that, I have LOL Comedy Club in San Antonio, Texas, Funny Bone in Liberty, Ohio, Kansas City coming up, St. Louis,
Phoenix,
Buffalo I just got today, so... Which that?
Any Phoenix?
I absolutely do stand up live in Phoenix, so I'll let you know. I know Rob Halford lives out there. He was going to come last time,
Rob and I see each other all the time. Yeah,
but COVID sparked up again. So, and it was probably right for him not to come because, man, they didn't give a shit. They packed everybody in that place. It's
loose. Arizona's loose.
Yeah, they're very loose. But I will be back down within the year to Phoenix Stand Up Live. So I'll make sure we reach out to you.
Absolutely. I'll come down and see you. I'd love to see you.
If you're a fan of Nazi comedy, Jay's your guy.
Nazi comedy. It's the character I've created.
Shannon.
And just check out my special Netflix and Comedy Central. And also, I think on Paramount now, Paramount Plus, that CBS All Access turned into.
Yeah.
You can go back, I think, and watch my half-hour special from 2008. I think
That's cool.
On Comedy Central. That's interesting.
That's how I got introduced to you, Jay. I remember seeing that on Comedy Central. I remember the star tattoos and the long hair, and that's how I always remembered you.
Maybe you would remember me by my jokes, but okay. I'll take it for
the tattoos. All right, Shannon, your plug real quick.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is, Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
I imagine, Alice, you believe in ghosts. Am I right or wrong?
I believe in demons and angels. I don't believe in ghosts.
Oh, fair enough.
These guys go searching for ghosts, but they're actually connecting up with demons. And I think that's very dangerous.
Did you watch the show Supernatural? Because this is a big Supernatural family over here.
Oh, yeah. That's a great show. I mean, Ghost Adventures, I watch a lot. And those guys, the guys that actually go down there and they scare themselves silly. You know,
do you watch any of what's his name? Jack Osborne's like when he goes to the
so funny. Yeah, Ozzy and Sharon on that show are just so funny.
It's really great. You know. All right, so follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton and my other show, The Good Sugar Podcast, about health and wellness. Detroit Stories, we said, is out now.
Ralph, we'll add, Ani Moosh.
Oh, Ani's not. Sorry, Ani, your plug. I'm sorry. You're gonna let me
Ralph
get my plug out first.
No, he's already yelling. Fucking. I got the song of the week shit.
Go ahead, Ani. I'm sorry.
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ani_Moosh. That's MOUSH. And check out my website at AniMooshMedia.com.
Okay. You could turn your camera on next time, Ani. You don't have to live in like some sort of weird witness relocation program.
Ani Moosh, show Alice Cooper what you look like.
Yeah, for God's sakes. So we have a goddamn legend on the show. Turn your fucking
camera on. It's been an honor to watch and listen.
You fucking show Alice Cooper.
Show some fucking respect to this guy.
Sorry.
All right, so my favorite song on the record is $1,000 High Heel Shoes. It just makes me laugh and made me happy to listen over and over again. So we'll add that to our playlist, thesdrshow.com/playlist. Mr. Cooper, honestly, I got to interview a bunch of times over the years. Always a pleasure. You are just a great dude. Thank you so much for coming on the SDR Show.
Sometimes